Hey, welcome back to the Golf Podcast. Mike, as you know, we've got some great advertisers who support the show each week. And the best thing about that is it keeps the show free for all of our listeners out there. And one reason why we have such great advertisers, because they know that we've got an amazing audience. So right now, what we like to do, and Mike will talk about in a second, we're going to do a little giveaway to go along with it. But we want to find out a little bit more about our audience. We want to find out who's listening and how we can make the show even better. So what we're doing is we're doing a quick survey. You can go to podsurvey.com/golf. Best of all, survey only takes about 5 minutes. Mike, I checked it out myself. You run through it really easy and it's completely anonymous, but you do have a chance to enter in for a gift card, right, Mike?
Yeah, it's great. It's a $100 Amazon gift card. We all use Amazon, so why not, right, Frank? You know, easy to do. I did it myself, you know, just to mess around with it. It took me all of about 2 minutes. So we, you know, strongly encourage that you all take it, and it certainly helps the show.
It does. And you know what? Like I said, that's how we keep our advertisers happy. Again, that's what keeps the lights on here. So for sure, if you have a chance, go ahead and check that out. It's podsurvey.com/golf. And Mike, now onto the show.
Welcome to the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
All right, welcome to the 85th episode of the Golf Podcast. We've got a really great interview today. Actually, I did this interview a couple days ago. I was able to talk to Allison Nicholas on the phone. We're gonna go cut to that interview in a second. But Allison, very impressive career, Mike. She's did quite a few years on the LPGA Tour, also the Ladies European Tour. Get this, Mike. She's got 12 career wins on the Ladies European Tour. That's good for 10th all time. Four wins on the LPGA Tour, and she won the U.S. Women's Open in 1997. We're going to talk a little bit about all of that with her. But right now, she's got a new book out, interesting book, kind of sharing the details of her career. It's called Walking Tall, and you can get that on Amazon. I'll link to that in the show notes. But it was so interesting, her story. I mean, a couple of the highlights and a couple of the high notes. First of all, here's somebody who, a couple things, started, she took up the game late in life. You know, she started playing when she was, I think, I got to remember when we talked to her, and we'll talk about it in the interview, but about 17 years old, she started. And how different is that compared to what we see now with so much of the LPGA and the PGA Tours, and these people are starting incredibly young. So A, it's proof of something we talk about all the time. You can play this game for life, and you don't need to start, you know, when you're in the playing when you're in the single digits in age in order to be good. And the other thing is, Mike, believe it or not, I mean, it's kind of a, you get it from the title of Walking Tall, but can you believe she's only 5 feet tall?
Wow.
Yeah. What's amazing is in 1997, she beat Nancy Lopez in the U.S. Women's Open. And Nancy is kind of, you know, a powerhouse in a lot of ways. And here she is, she comes along, she talks about it too. And she tells me in the interview how she can't obviously get a lot of distance with her size and her height, but she just murders them with the short game. She had a great short game. Very interesting. And one thing that I found really interesting, and I was happy to get a chance to ask her about, was when she was first starting out, she had a golf coach who actually gave her Nancy Lopez's book to study. And then just how many years later she beats her in the U.S. Open. How cool is that?
That's really cool. Good for her.
Yeah. But you know, one thing that I really attached to, and I'm sure you can too, part of her story was how her father really got her started with the game. And you having a 2-year-old daughter, myself, my daughter's a year and a half now, you know, we're kind of have the same type of hopes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm starting to ingrain, you know, all that stuff now, giving her the clubs, the plastic clubs, the small toddler clubs, and even watching it on TV, even her watching me in the backyard, all that stuff. So, you know, I'm starting now, and maybe I don't have to start now, but hey, why not, right?
Right. Well, and that's the thing. Like, what I find so interesting in this is that obviously anybody with kids knows you can't make them do anything. You know, they have to have that enjoyment. But what you can do is kind of like take some obstacles out of the way for them, you know, and I won't give away too much because we're going to talk about it in the interview. But one thing that Allison said was that her father kind of gave her that space and said, you know what, take X amount of time and learn the game, you know, and he kind of supported her through that. Like I said, it was a little bit later in life, 17 years old or so, but he's like, you know, I'll give you that. I'll give you the time. I'll support you. I'll do whatever you need to do. And I'll give you that chance to kind of get out there so she could dedicate her full time to it. So again, I don't want to give away too much. We're going to jump to the interview in a minute. Other than that, you know, Mike, I've been playing a little bit. I'm in that frustrated spot where I'm not playing well. You and I, though, we got to get ready. We're playing Pound Ridge on Friday.
I'm excited. A truly remarkable and difficult Pete Dye course up in Westchester, New York. So I'm excited for it for a number of reasons. I've heard a lot about it, you know, being so local to it, heard a lot about it, heard about the difficult layout, but even more excited because right now I'm playing the best golf. Yeah. And you're the complete opposite, you know, stage right now. But it's funny because, you know, I went out on Tuesday morning and I played nine holes and I shot another sub 49. That's my second one in a row now. And everything is clicking on all cylinders. Went to the range last Saturday, did my little music warm up. And then I went back to the range today after work and hit a bucket. I'm just trying to stay consistent. I'm trying to do the pre-shot routine, trying to really nail it down because I want to tackle this course on Friday. I'm not going to try to expect a lot, right? You know, because, you know, you got those 430-yard par fours with water and very narrow fairways and an uneven lie pretty much everywhere your ball ends up. It's going to be one of those probably really fast greens. But, hey, I'm just excited to get out there with you and kind of, you know, bounce some stuff off each other.
Yeah, and I'm excited too. I'm going to hit the range tomorrow. I'm trying to play as much as I can this week to get ready for it. But I'm kind of taking a bit of my own medicine here and trying to heed my own advice because one little trap that I notice that I've fallen into, I've played two bad rounds in the past week or so and two consecutive bad rounds. And one little thing that I'm finding that it's a trap I'm falling into, I think a large part of it came from I was – kind of going over in detail the video of my swing and looking at it and seeing like where I can improve. And as you know, I talk about it a lot on the show. I'm not a guy who gets hung up on mechanics that much. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the game, I say this all the time. I agree with the sentiment of swing your swing. Don't try to replicate someone else's swing. Swing what you're comfortable with. And I just saw some areas of my swing where I'm like, well, maybe I can, you know, get a little bit more extension here. Maybe I can do this, that. And I'm trying to work them all in. And all of a sudden, I'm like doing things I never do. You know, my miss hits are usually a hook, right? Because I have a natural draw. And now my miss hits with this swing are huge. I mean, massive slices. Like, and just ruining my scorecard because I'm talking about like OB, you know, slices.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm beating myself up. And then what happened was I played 18 with my father the other day and it was just like a tragedy. It was terrible. So he was kind of just giving me some pointers with that swing. And then finally we kind of decided, I'm like, look, I'm just gonna go back, swing my swing, whatever it may be. So we wrap up 18. This is where, of course, you always discover something where, like on the 17th or 18th hole, right?
Of course.
So on 17, I'm hitting it pretty well. 18, I'm like, I'm gonna just swing my swing. I par 18, the par three. I'm like, I gotta hit the driver again because that's where the biggest problem was because I was trying the most with the driver. Plus, I got a new driver, that new bomb tech that I'm working in. So it's like that too compounded. So I do that. Then I play – I'm like, let's keep going. I play one, par that, and then come back. The way the course is laid out, you can play 11. It comes right back to the clubhouse. I play 11, and I birdie that. So in three holes, now I'm one under. So I'm like, okay, that's a great way to end. But I'm like – looking back on it, I'm like, okay, well, I tried to make these swing changes, right? And the couple where I did make that swing change and I hit the ball well, I didn't gain any real distance. Like I gained a little bit better ball flight than I wanted, a little higher trajectory, but I didn't gain distance, which is really what I was after from the arm extension. And then I think to myself, like, all right, I didn't gain distance and I lost consistency. So what does that do for me? Nothing.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where I'm just going to go back to my swing for now. And I, other thing I think I'm going to do is, and just make a mental note to myself, I'm not going to try to make too many changes just off of speculation. I think if there's anything that I do mechanics, when I talk about mechanics, it's going to be under the eye of a professional. You know, we talked a lot of times before about the benefits of getting a professional lesson. Well, I think that's where really you're going to, you got to go to the right people when you have those specific areas, something like mechanics, these, something these guys study. Yes. Other areas. Absolutely. I believe you can improve just getting out there, learning the game, but that's a little bit, and I'm toying with it. I'm going to continue to report my progress on it. I still think there's going to be some swing tweaks in there, because you always do want to be improving, but the days of me making dramatic swing changes just to make them, it's not going to happen. I got to stay within myself, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always preaching that to people, especially people learning the game. I'm just play your swing. We always talk about, you know, Jim Furyk has one of the weirdest looking swings on tour, but that's his swing. You know, the other day when I shot that 39, played nine, I almost had my first hole in one, Frank, and it was on a par three. And it was funny because for some reason that day, that particular day, I went out so early that the green was still really wet. Because it was like 7 a.m. It was cold out. And my divot mark was like my ball mark was about 3 feet in front of the pin, dead line. It hit it. It hit made a plug mark, and then it bounced about a foot forward, leaving me about a foot and a half from the hole.
Wow.
So I'm like, if I did this like an hour later, you know what I mean? But, but you know, the point I'm trying to is that particular hole, I was hooking every time I played that course, I was overpowering my irons, and I'll talk about this till I'm blue in the face, and you can all write in and tell me to shut up about it. But I slowed down my tempo, and my golf game has improved dramatically. And I'm hitting greens on every par three I step up to, because, you know, the level you and I are at, we step up to 150-yard par three, we got to hit that green.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I've worked on. I was kind of in the stage that you are in now, like a month and a half ago, and that's how I kind of righted the ship. So, you know, hopefully you can figure it out and get back.
That's certainly my hope, and I think I will. And you always, any golfer's going to go through these things. We watched Jordan Spieth miss two cuts. I mean, after playing the very top of his game. So it can happen. I think the takeaway, at least for me, like I said, we say we're not pros here. We just try to learn things, and as we learn them, help our listeners learn from our experience and some of the mistakes we've made. And I think that's one thing that's a lesson to be learned, is like not trying to do too much based on how a swing should, quote unquote, should look. So a lot to be had there. But Mike, we got a lot to talk about with Allison. So, you know, like I said, I did this interview a couple of days ago. We're going to cut to it in a second. Great, you know, great talking to her. A lot to be learned just from that and from her career. So let's just jump into that right now. Okay, so we have the absolute pleasure of speaking to 12-time Ladies European Tour winner, 4-time LGPA Tour winner, and 1997 U.S. Women's Open winner, Allison Nicholas. Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So now
to talk to you.
Well, now to add to that list, we now have, I guess, author.
Wow. Someone helped me with it. Yeah, Madeline Winnett was the co-author, and she wrote most of the book. But obviously, she had to have all my input and all the stories that I relayed to her about my time on tour and my golf, and a little bit about my personal life, but not a huge amount.
Right. So, if you don't mind me asking, with such a resume, what was the deciding factor? What was the motivation to kind of catalog and, you know, put it all in words?
Well, you know, I think I'd been thinking about writing a book for some time, and a lot of people had sort of said to me, look, you know, it'd be really interesting if you could write your story. And when I was captain of the Solheim Cup in 2011 and we won against the Americans for the first time in three occasions, someone suggested it, but we couldn't find a publisher at the time. And then a couple of years later, someone asked me again, and they actually found a publisher. So it's taken us a year to sort of get everything together, and but it's worked out very well. A lot of people have enjoyed the book very much so far. So you know, there's lots of stories in there and bits and bobs about how I cope with the pressure, and you know, certainly about my technique and lessons and how I approach things mentally, and then obviously about my tournament wins and lots of stuff about the Solheim Cup, and which is coming up very shortly, in fact, next week.
Right.
So, yeah, it's quite entertaining. She's written it very well, the lady that helped me, Madeline Winnett. And a lot of people say it's a lot of fun as well as, you know, very insightful.
I would have to say I'm thoroughly enjoying it myself. And one area that I'd like to hear a little bit more about, because I connect to it on a personal level as the father of a young daughter myself, who I'm hoping when she's old enough gets into the game. I can see here that your father had a lot of help in the beginning as far as even guiding you and getting you involved in the game. Is that correct?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he saw very early on that I obviously enjoyed the game when I first started, and he could see that, you know, I was going to be good. And, you know, the fact that he was able then to say, look, you know, let's go for this, was really encouraging. And he gave me the opportunity to really pursue the game. I went to school up to 16 and then left, and then I did a few jobs in the winter. But then he said, you know, I'll give you 4 years to give it a go and see what you can do. And without that vision and insight, you know, and that opportunity, really, I wouldn't have been able to do, I've done what I did. So I can thank my dad. Obviously, unfortunately, he passed away earlier this year. So it's sad that he wasn't able to see the book, but he knew that I was writing it, and it was a great encouragement to me.
Yeah, I'm very sorry to hear that. But yeah, as you say here, he was very dedicated. And one thing you mentioned was that right off the bat, he got you started with lessons because he saw the value of understanding those fundamentals early.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people tend to take up the game and then get information and help from their friends rather than going to a teacher who can sort of get those basic fundamentals sort of embedded, really. I think it's really important, because as soon as we get into bad habits, they're very, very difficult to break. So I would encourage anyone really to, you know, take some lessons. You know, you don't have to take them every week, but every couple of weeks or every month, just to, you know, get those basic fundamentals down, and it'll just help you enjoy the game better, because you'll be able to do it more easily.
Right. And another encouraging thing about your story is it's proof that you don't necessarily need to pick up a club when you're 4 or 5 years old, because you got a little bit of a later start, right? You started playing the game around 17.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's unusual for most tour pros, you know, but actually, you know, particularly now, I think, you know, the good players are even younger now. So it has changed a little bit, but it doesn't mean to say that you can't make it if you take it up a little bit later. But it seems now that the trend is that, you know, girls are getting very, very good at the age 13, 14, 15. Mm. And, you know, you know, Brooke Henderson has just joined the LPGA and she's only 17 years old. So the trend has changed, but it doesn't mean to say that you can't be successful if you take it up a little bit later.
Right. It certainly can be done. And you're the proof. I mean, in the book, you talk about playing to an 8 or a 10 handicap just after a handful of months. So you were certainly took to it like a duck to water. But yeah, I know I see a lot of people and young golfers who get discouraged if they pick it up a little bit later, you know, in their late teens, because they see both the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour, it seems like they're starting their professional careers at that age, so it can be a little discouraging. But your story is definitely the counterpoint to that.
Yeah, and I think Greg Norman was another example. I think he actually took it out later than me, and was even more successful. So, you know, it's all about, you know, whether you've got the desire or the determination to work hard and the discipline to work hard, and you know, it can be done.
Right.
So I would encourage anyone to just keep going and keep enjoying it and working hard, and you know, you'll see those small gains, and hopefully, you know. So not to sort of say, oh well, I haven't actually cracked this by 14, so I'm going to pack it in or whatever. I think that you know, it can be done. So you know, everyone matures and sort of gets better at different ages. So just because of the trend is that at the moment, I would encourage anyone to just give it a go if that's what they really, really want.
Well, the nice thing too is whether you end up being a tour player or not, this is a game we can play for life. So I would say picking it up, it doesn't matter how old you are.
No, I would agree. I mean, you know, it is a game and it's there to be enjoyed. Yes, it's a tough game because there's so many elements and so many variables. But, you know, I think that the number one thing is to enjoy it first and foremost. If you can get a little bit of coaching and help to get those basic fundamentals bedded in, then it can be a game that you can play well into your 80s, which is good. And you can have a lot of fun and meet a lot of people and play some fantastic golf courses. So there's lots of benefits from a health perspective as well as an enjoyment perspective.
Absolutely. And so in your book, Walking Tall, another thing that I liked, another story, and that's what I really enjoy about the book is that it's packed with these little stories and about your career as it progresses. But you mentioned how very early on, one of your coaches handed you a book about Nancy Lopez. And then later in life, you would go on to actually beat her in the 97 U.S. Women's Open. So how did that feel? Did that feel like kind of coming full circle?
Yeah, it was unbelievable, really. I mean, you couldn't write it, really, could you? You couldn't script it in that sense. I mean, it was interesting. You know, obviously when I was a junior, he was the junior organizer at my club, and he just said, well, take this book, and I read it and learned an awful lot from Nancy. And then, of course, beat her in 97, which, you know, it was difficult because I know she was a legend over there in America, worldwide, basically, and she never won the US Open. Although, you know, that's just the nature of competition, and it was a real shame that she wasn't able to do that. But she laughed about it, really. And she also encouraged me to come back over to America because when I first went over to America, I didn't do very well. And I was struggling because, the strength and depth and competition is much greater than in Europe. And I didn't do very well. And then we played in the Solheim Cup in 1990. And then she said to me, Ali, you haven't given it enough time. You know, you've only given it a year or so. You need more time to be able to be successful over here. So her daughter reminded her that it was her fault because she was encouraging me to go back to America. But, you know, she's a lovely lady and she's done an enormous amount for women's golf, not only in America but worldwide. So I said, you know, just take that on board. You know, you've won so many events and you're a Hall of Famer, and you know, but you know, she was very disappointed. She was, you know, it was difficult for me from that point of view. But you know, as I said, that's the nature of competition.
Right, but that's certainly a great story of camaraderie. Is that something that was prevalent on the LPGA Tour when you were there, or do you see much of that now as a captain for the Solheim Cup? And do you find that the ladies help each other out in their careers in a lot of ways?
Yeah, some do, some don't. Some keep to themselves and don't share stuff. Others are prepared to, you know, encourage and help other players. So, you know, to just depends on, you know, the individual character. But on the whole, yeah, I mean, you know, you can learn an awful lot from different players, and some will be, you know, if you ask questions. I used to ask Joanne Carner quite a lot of things when I was playing, because I, you know, asked her how to chip out the rough in America, and she was always very helpful. So, you know, and others, you know, didn't necessarily keep themselves to themselves, but on the whole, everybody was pretty friendly, and you know, obviously there were some rivalries, but that's always the case, and it makes it all very interesting, doesn't it? So
it does, and that's what makes things like the Solheim Cup so much fun as well.
Oh yeah, I mean that is one of the greatest competitions. Just like the Ryder Cup, it's action packed, it's pressure packed, and it's just intriguing to the audience to see match play situations, and it makes it exciting, and it showcases the best in the world for women's golf, really.
And talking about that pressure, like we started to talk about at the top of the show, many of our listeners, you know, the most pressure they may ever feel is playing in a local club game or a league or something like that. But you do feel it. So at the level that you were at, you know, at the grand stage, what did you do to kind of get through that pressure and be able to play through it?
I think, you know, you learn to embrace it, really, rather than fighting it. I think that's one of the things that I try to tell them, you know, particularly the rookies at the Solheim Cup, is that Now, you want to embrace the pressure, because as soon as you try and fight it, it turns into anxiety, and then actually, your adrenaline and all your thoughts get out of control. So, and I think breathe, make sure you breathe.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. And just try and enjoy the experience rather than think, if you try and fight it, you'll make things worse. So I think it's just embracing it, which is not easy to do, but it can be done. And it's just a matter of, disciplining your mind in that respect.
Yeah, well, that certainly makes a lot of sense. And that's what comes from, I think, just playing the game and gaining that experience. You also gain that experience of experiencing the pressure, so to speak.
Yeah, and also, I think the most important thing is to concentrate on the process as well. So the process of lining the shot up and getting it and seeing the shot and concentrating on that rather than the result, because most people are thinking about the result before they've hit it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that most of the pros always concentrate on, the process. So your pre-shot routine, post-shot routine, rather than thinking, over-evaluating things and thinking about the result. Because then if you do that, you're not actually in the present moment.
Yeah,
so
that makes
that important part.
Absolutely. And, kind of shifting gears here, but it's a question that I really wanted to ask you, because we ask a lot of our guests. I'd like to get your take on what you think the future, as someone who's been in the sport for as long as you have and experienced so many different facets of it, what do you feel the future holds for the sport? And when I say that, there's a couple of things. We hear more and more people saying about the popularity of golf waning, yet those of us who are involved in it, we see a lot of exciting things going on. We, especially not even on just like a lot of us talk about the PGA Tour, but the LPGA Tour as well. I had a guest on, not too long ago, another golf instructor who had said, if you really want to improve your game and you want to see the game being played the way it should be, watch the LPGA. Is that something you agree with? What do you think the future is moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. I think, as an amateur player, it's very difficult to relate to the way the guys hit it, although it's great to watch them, and I'm not taking anything away from them because I think they're incredible, but it's easier for an amateur player to go and watch the LPGA players because they can relate to how they hit the ball, because they don't hit it enormous distances, but it's very rhythmical, so I think it's important for them to watch them, because you can learn an awful lot from them in terms of rhythm and just swinging the club, rather than trying to emulate the men, because that's probably an impossibility, basically, because they hit it such vast distances. But yeah, I think that you can learn a lot. And I think, because of economic times, you will get swings and roundabouts in terms of people taking up the game and leaving the game because of the economic climate, and we're finding that in the UK at the moment,
Mm-hmm.
But I think that swings and roundabouts, it will change as the economic climate gets better, and I think that a lot of young people will be wanting to take up the game just because of the role models in both women's and men's golf at the moment who are doing very well, the youngsters. I think they can see that how attractive the game is. So I think there's a good, I think the game's still got a great future. Hopefully we can encourage others, more people to participate, and, get a lot out of the game themselves.
Right. And I think a big help to that is going to be encouraging stories like your own that we see in this book. I mean, not only do we talk about you getting a start later in life and being able to accomplish what you did, but you even talk about, right in the first chapter, you talk about what your quote, diminutive stature, right? So being able to, we talked just now about the PGA Tour players hitting the ball a mile or whatever it may be, but the things you were able to accomplish and not being 6 foot whatever like Dustin Johnson or somebody like that, there's a lot to be said for that as well.
Oh yeah, I mean that, that never really stopped me. I mean, yes, I might not hit the ball as far as Laura Davies and whatever, but I made up for that in with my short game.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still able to hit it, a decent distance. Yes, I had to do a little bit of work in the gym, I think one of the chapters is about the physical side of the game and what I did as a player. Yeah, you need to probably do a little bit of work in the gym, but you can hit it a long way when you're small. You know, if you go back to Ian Woosnam, it was exactly the same. So, you know, he was an inspiration to me from that point of view. And then you look at some of the Korean girls, they're not tall necessarily.
Right.
But they still hit the ball a long way. So it's possible, absolutely. Yeah. And I would encourage anyone not to see that as a limitation.
Right, exactly. And that's how we can get even more people involved in the game. Okay, so we won't keep you too long. I know it's much later there in the UK than it is here. I don't want to keep you up. But can you just tell our audience a little bit about how they can get the book? I know it's out in the UK right now. That'll be released in America shortly. Is that right?
Well, it's on Amazon.co.uk. And so you can just go onto the web and you can download it on Kindle, or you can get the paperback on Amazon as well.
Okay.
So yeah, so that's all you need to do is go onto the World Wide Web and put in Amazon.co.uk. If you put Walking Tall Alison Nicholas, it will come up and you can purchase it that way.
Excellent, and we'll link to that in the show notes as well to make that easy so everyone can find the book. Alison, I want to thank you again for taking the time to talk to us. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much indeed. Enjoyed it.
All right, Mike, so we're back. So that was fun. Like I said, getting to talk to Alison, very interesting. Her involvement over the years, too, of the Solheim Cup, that's coming up. Me, personally, I love that type of stuff. I will admit, I'll be the first one to admit, I don't watch a ton of the LPGA tour. I should, because I know that some of those, like the swings that they do, they're just technically perfect. Did watch a little bit of that Evian tournament over in France, where Lydia came back, mm-hmm. had that amazing 8-under on the final round, and to win that, become the youngest woman to win a major, 18 years old. Amazing.
But, it's ridiculous.
You know, I don't watch it enough, but things like that, like the Solheim Cup, we got the President's Cup coming up. I love watching that type of golf. I love watching team golf.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And even, you know, take it a step further, I love playing in outings that are scrambles, because again, team golf, you know, it's the only time we get to like partner up with people and kind of help each other win something. So Ryder Cup, President's Cup, I mean, you name it, I love it too.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Any of that type of stuff. Mm. Kind of funny. I talked a couple times about how I was subbing in the league, the local league here. Mm. I'm probably going to get involved in it next year. But I subbed in probably 3 rounds. We did our fair share in those. And my father's now back playing again. He's well from his surgery. But they're in the championship, and it's actually going to be on Thursday tomorrow. So, tomorrow as of when we're recording the show, but interesting. I mean, it definitely, Mike, if you like team playing like that, I encourage you to check out those leagues again, because yeah, I had a lot of fun doing it. I mean, it's really cool to be able to do that and playing with somebody and having that camaraderie, so to speak.
I would love to, but I got to think that people with 1 and 2 and even 3 or 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8, whatever, kids, it's going to be hard.
Well, with 8
doesn't
kids,
matter
it
better
how be hard. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, but so, you're right. You're right. And that is the biggest complaint. Like I said, we talked about the benefits of joining a league. That's the biggest complaint that I hear constantly, is that it is hard. It's a little time consuming. It's a little bit difficult. But, you know, if you have a good substitute to make those couple times you can't do it, you're in good shape.
Sure.
So anyway, just to wrap everything up again, I will link to in the show notes Alison's book. If you want to check it out, you can get that on Kindle. You can get the, you know, order it on paperback. Really interesting. Anybody who likes golf, if you're like me, I mean, you love hearing the stories of golf too. And it's a very interesting, compelling story. If you go to Amazon, you can actually, they let you read the first like chapter or so. So you can check it out and just get an idea of how she started with the game. And it's good from many perspectives, as I said, whether you be like us, like a father and hoping that, you know, your kids get into the game and how that path happened for her, or just herself and some of those inside stories of what it was like being on the tour and playing and the experiences she had, all very interesting. So I want to thank her again for coming on the show. The other thing is, like we talked about at the top of the show, don't forget to take 5 minutes out of your time and just take our survey. Go to podsurvey.com/golf. I will link to that in the show notes as well. Again, those survey questions kind of help us get a feel for the listeners. And it's a great way for us to give our advertisers a better idea of who's listening. And like I said, I mean, just the facts of life is that that's who keeps the show going, because they keep the lights on, so to speak. So we love having great advertisers, and that's the way to keep them coming. Plus, you get a chance to win that Amazon gift card. So definitely check that out, podsurvey.com/golf. Again, thanks to Allison Nicholas for coming on the show. And Mike, that's all I have. Anything else on your end?
We're going to have a lot to report next week after our round Friday, because I'm sure you're all going to be wondering, you know, how we ended up out there.
Yes. And I know he's a busy guy, but we're going to try to grab an interview with the owner of Pound Ridge, talk to him a little bit. And mm-hmm. if we get a chance to speak with him, we're going to throw that in the show as well. So lots coming up. We've got, I think, 4 or 5 great interviews, some surprise guests too coming up in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned with that. Oh yeah, Mike, I wish I mentioned this at the beginning of the show, but the other big announcement is our app is out for iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
So first things first, I know a couple of people were emailing us and they were a little bit worried that this meant we were going away from iTunes. We are not. This is just another way to listen to and connect with the show. But if you go to the Apple, it's on iOS. We're working on it for Android. But if you go to the iTunes store and just search the Golf Podcast, you'll see us pop up. We have an app. It's another great way to listen to the show. You can stream through all the episodes on there. You can see them as soon as they come out. But again, if you like listening to us on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, we're there. We're on SoundCloud now. Our goal really is just to be anywhere that you're listening, because we want to make it as easy as possible. So we're not taking those other things away, but we have added the app. So if you're on iOS, iPhone, whatever it may be, definitely check it out. Download the app, you know, and let us know what you think about it. All right. Until then, you can email us at always by emailing us at podcast@golficity.com. You can also check us out on the web at Golficity, or connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, a lot of ways to get in touch with us. All right, Mike, let's go out there. Let's hit Pound Ridge. Let's hit it hard.
Yeah, let's beat it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Before it beats us up, right?
Exactly.
All right. So we'll see you all again next week. Thanks for listening.